This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Helen Farmer with you. We were broadcasting live from Cairo One Zabil. So health and wellness very much in the spotlight on today's show as we spoke to the general manager. Also addressing the fact that so many children are leaving school before the end of term. What does educator Simon Crane say about it? And many people reaching out giving their hot take over the hot summer. Also getting the expert help of Dr. Mike, aka Mike's Vet. What you need to know about fostering or adopting a dog. And the Little Guard project is underway. Working prototype of a smart band for babies created by a female engineer. She joined us, Dr. Ruler, to explain the origin story. Plus, with new social media platforms being announced all the time, how do you decide which one is worth your hard-earned time? And new rules coming in for influencers in the capital. Alex from House of Social had the inside scoop. So if you've got your phone to hand, and I do, and it's safe to do so, head over to my Instagram stories. It's just _ Helen Farmer _. And tell me in the poll, if you are a parent, of course, are you taking your kids out of school early this term? Deeply unscientific, but 29% of people who respond to the survey said yes, 71% saying no. And trust me, it's all kicking off, which is why we have brought in Mr. Simon Crane, the headmaster at Brighton College, Dubai. Hello, Mr. Crane. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. Except I feel like stirred something up that now I'm thinking it could be an interesting one, to be honest. Might I lose some friends over this? It's possible. Now, I dropped my daughters off at school yesterday. And listen, no complaints about the quieter road. That was glorious. But it was definitely significantly quieter on campus too. And I wondered what you've noticed, you kind of post-Eid in particular.
Yeah, we've noticed a slight dip in attendance. Nothing too significant, though. We obviously want the children to be in right up until the end of term. Lots going on, lots of learning to be done.
Is there an official KDHJ policy on this, on terms of taking kids out of school early, or is it up to the individual school, Simon?
So schools will write and publish their own attendance policies with support of KHDA, and then operate those policies as they see fit to do so. So there is... some guidance for schools to follow, and obviously KHJ look at attendance in their inspections and do rate it on a scale, with outstanding attendance at 98% and very good attendance at 96% and so on.
One of the messages I had, and I'm not going to say who it was from or which school it was from, was saying that once the reports are done towards the end of term, the KHJ has kind of got their attendance numbers in. So does it really matter at this stage in terms of the numbers I'm talking about? The ethics around it and the education we're going to come to separately. But is that your understanding, or has this person got the wrong end of the stick?
Yeah, I think the numbers, every day, school day, there's 180 school days in a year. The numbers matter right up until to the end of the academic year. I would say that, there's 185 other days in a year, plenty of time for visits, holidays, shopping, other appointments, etc.
Messages coming in on Rasha saying, I've paid for the term and that's what the child will do. Message here saying, we're missing a couple of days only, mostly flight related to do with cost and busyness. One here saying, as a working parent, I can't take as much leave as my daughter. She's going to be in school till the last day and then camp. And a lot of people saying the school break is long enough. Anonymous message saying, my friends are in until the end. I think we get enough holiday time. Simon Crane is with us today, headmaster of Brighton College, Dubai. We're going to talk about, are there any concerns and drawbacks? Are there any potential benefits as well? And in the UK, there are fines. Is this something that could be introduced here? And I'm talking about a few days rather than the UAE government policy around denying your child education, of which there is jail time and significant fines attached to it. We've been talking about individual policies, what we're all noticing around Dubai right now. And it's so individual, Simon. I'm obviously in a full-time job, so I have, limited holiday, much like many others. So I am, long gone are the days. In fact, I never think I had the days, unfortunately, where, come summer months, I'd be packing my bags and packing the kids up and be gone for 6 weeks. And, I'm a bit envious of people that are able to do that, to be honest. I know there's pros and cons to both. So I do feel like there's, a bit of judgment, perhaps, on some sides. sides coming in on the text line and also on Instagram too. Message here saying kids are reporting about doing nothing at school after Eid, so who's to blame for that? Hence, parents are leaving for holidays early. Can you explain a little bit about what actually is happening in practice at school at Brighton there? Is there learning happening right now that is going to be, you know, valuable, invaluable come September, or is it a bit of a wind down phase?
Teacher learning, you know, every lesson, every day is so crucial in the school setting. So, you know, our stance on this is that teaching and learning continues right up until the last day of term, which for Brighton College is on the 4th of July. Of course, there are lots of celebratory events, end of term graduations, prize givings, celebratory assemblies, and they're all really important too. Education is, of course, about progress, but it's also about reflection and also looking ahead to the next academic year.
My kids love the end of term. I'm getting messages about house days and, you know, message here saying my kids have always wanted to go to school to the last day, both before winter and summer. The importance is social more than education. It gives them time to spend with their friends and teachers without the stress of finishing assigned new lessons. In my opinion, this teaches them committing to what they signed up for. Plus, I look at it as a play date that I don't have to supervise. Well, I wanted to put this to you, Simon, in terms of, you know, and I am presuming from your accent that you've worked in education in the UK. What role do you think it is when it comes to paying for education? Because there's kind of two schools of thought here. One is the I'm paying an awful lot for my child's education and I want to be getting every single day out of it. And then the other is I'm, you know, it's not a very nice word, I'm a customer and it's ultimately my decision how I kind of navigate this. Do you feel like there is a bit of a shift depending on if education's paid for and in attitude?
I think that, you know, inevitable, you know, if, you know, a financial transaction has occurred, then, you know, certainly people's opinions can be heightened. But, you know, in education, you know, you are signing up for a school and for a school's policies and rules and procedures. And therefore, you know, you're agreeing to them as you've signed that enrollment form. So I think it's more than just in terms of, you know, an exchange, a transaction. It's far more in terms of benefiting the children. And also, you know, following the rules and the guidelines that have been set out by the school and the authorities.
Simon Crane with us today. Let us know your take on 4001. Pfizer saying, I like keeping my kids until the last day. It's the best part of the year for the kids with all the celebrations and farewells, especially if they're moving schools or have a long summer away. Becky saying, staying's a waste of time. Sitting in the common room watching YouTube and the flights are cheaper to get home. Let's hear what Karen's got to say.
Hi, Helen. I won't be taking my children out earlier because we pay enough in school fees as it is. And my young children are ages 5 and 2, and they've only got a week to go anyway. As long as we're safe, taking them in and out of the car, shading them from the sun, because let's be honest, I think it's the heat that really gets to them. I think we'll be fine for another week.
And what about Munira's take?
Hi there. So since I think the Eid holidays, my kids say that hardly anybody's coming to school, and I can see it in the traffic that's going to school. It's hardly there in the mornings and at pickups, so definitely there is a big reduction of pupils attending, which makes my kids not want to go themselves, which is a struggle now every day because they are either saying their friends are not there, they're hardly doing much work, which I don't know if it's true or not. And they're just basically saying, oh no, it's a waste of time, we don't want to go to school, nobody's even there, we're not doing much and whatnot. So I feel like if they are sitting at home, you know, it's just bumming around way beyond the holiday has even started. So I have been sending them, but I did let them miss a day last week. And they might miss this Friday, to be honest. But they are going during the week. Yeah. That's it.
Munira giving her take. Now, I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I am keeping my kids until the very end, but 3 weeks ago, we did take them out of school for 2 days to go to their grandfather's 80th birthday. Just need to be a bit careful with this one. Message here saying, me and my husband disagree on this. I believe I've paid for it. And there have been so many missed days already. Do you know what? That's so true, especially this year when we look at the floods. And it's important. My husband thinks a week doesn't matter. And a question here saying, how can I explain better to my kids the importance of attendance and finishing the last day of school? They said they're not doing anything in class, just playing and watching movies. And I think this is something that's also coming through on the DMs as well. Is this kind of, you know, it's a bit unfair, you know, why should someone leave and someone has to stay? One here saying, you know, it really devalues school to the kids a bit, which is a struggle. The kids have loads of fun in the last few days, and as they get older, I'd like them to remember that. And we've had a lot of messages on this. We're going to be hearing some voice notes in just a few minutes. Message here, and I know Brighton obviously goes all the way through, Simon. Message thing saying, why did the kids do final exams before Eid? Was that the case at your school? And, you know, whose kind of directive is that? Or is it up to a school to decide the timing?
It's up to a school, really, to decide the timing. And obviously, at our school, they are spread out over a period of time, some before, some after Eid. And there needs to be, you know, adequate time to for children to sit those assessments, and then of course for them to be marked, and for feedback to happen and reports to be written before the end of term. So there does need to be a little bit of a buffer before the actual last day of term.
What impact, and this is the kind of thing that I've been struggling with a little bit with my kids, is, oh, you know, my friends have left early. It feels like there is an impact on other students as well when kids head off early. What do you think the other, you know, concerns or drawbacks from, you know, a teacher or morale community point of view that parents perhaps might not occur to them because they're on the plane?
Yeah, I think, you know, the end of term is a special time. We all remember when we were at school, those moments at the end of term when you sort of celebrated the year and, you know, rewards were given out and celebratory assemblies and so on. So it's a special time that children remember and will miss, and they'll miss that memory. So it's such a crucial time to be in school to wrap up the year and look ahead to, and to have that sense of closure on that chapter as you then go ahead and enjoy the holidays.
I mean, to be honest with you, keep them longer from my point of view. It's too, you know, coming from the UK, I think we're in school until, I think it must be about, last week of July. And in the UK, there are fines for taking kids out of school, not just at the end of term, but, you know, unauthorised at other times, you know, obviously the sickness, which, you know, can't be helped. But is that something you think would be effective here as a deterrent?
I think it'd be a very interesting experiment, certainly. But, you know, I think in whatever sort of deterrent schools that, you know, the government roll out needs to be strong. It needs to obviously capture attention, but I think also, you know, schools, we can do lots in terms of the education around attendance. And, you know, I often say to the children at Brighton College and the parents that, you know, attendance and going to school is such a life skill. We wouldn't be having this discussion if we were talking about, you know, going on our holidays 2 weeks before our approved leave by our employer.
Simon Crane, thank you so much for your time. We're going to leave it with the listeners now. Simon Crane, the headmaster of Brighton College, all the very best to you, the team, the students, for the end of term and into summer as well. A message here saying, I used to take my kids out early when they were 4 and 5, so younger. We flew back to Puerto Rico in the summer, 2 flights via the US and 24 hours total travel. Flights are less expensive in the summer. My daughter and son were bummed to miss the last party days, so now I make an effort to book flights early enough in the year so we get a reasonable price and they can enjoy the last few days of school with their friends. We look at most of the families keep their children into the end, but I totally understand my friends who pull out their kids 4 or 5 days before because they're traveling as a family of 6 in the US. That is a massive cost saving. At the end of the day, it's a different cost benefit analysis for every family. And while we strive to complete the school year, we do appreciate a bit of flexibility. Let's head over to the voice notes now. Really interesting messages. This is Alexa.
Hi, Helen. So with regards to leaving early over the summer, as much as I think it would be great to beat the heat, when it comes to schools and our kids, I just feel like they've had so much time already off this year. You know, it just seems like a total waste of money for the amount that we pay towards school fees for them to not get the very last minute of school for the year. But I also just feel like then they will miss out, as a lot of events and things, at least for our school, seems to be crammed into the very last week of the school year. So for us, we are here till the very end. Have a great summer.
You too, Alexa. What about Kinder's take on this topic?
Hi, Helen. I just wanted to add that, yes, I do think those days after the finals in schools are stressing parents out, because once you have a teenager, your child basically doesn't want to go to school. And my suggestion is actually to, like, I would love to see KHDA actually shortening the winter breaks and spring breaks, and, you know, letting kids finish schools directly after they finish their finals, which is something that, you know, we all grew up doing.
Interesting take and message in that similar vein on 4001 saying, Helen, this is a topic that has many of us disheartened. Half the kids are gone now and school doesn't end until the 5th of July. Schools are enabling this and allowing this, even doing a questionnaire months back, almost welcoming this, cramming in tests and demands all a month back. In what world do parents create the end date? Teachers are happier with the chill vibes and even mentioned to kids it's an easy month. Also in our school, a week before Eid, many left because of the good deals. It's really unfair and teaches our children that the rules don't apply. I hope this changes. So lots of messages coming in on this, both on the text line and indeed on the voice note. Now this is Karina, who's raising a point that we're going to be addressing on the show tomorrow, which is about cheaper flights.
The last days of school after the exams are, in my opinion, just a waste of money for both schools and parents. Both the teacher and the kids alike are actually in no mood to put a considerate effort in, and the teaching part, if it happens, it just goes to waste completely. I personally think that the school should be over by the end of June, and especially the British school, because I know that the American school have a different program for the summer. But yes, the British school should definitely be over by end of June, especially that most of us expats prefer to go back to our own countries for 1 or 2 months, depending on the luxury that we can afford. So I personally see a huge advantage in the kids upbringing, being able to spend 1 or 2 months getting rooted to a normal lifestyle and teaching our kids cultures and traditions. I think this is a big plus for their upbringing, just being away for 2 months from the UAE. You know, it's normal lifestyle, normal weather, different childhood, small stuff that they can do and that are actually not able to do here. Also, to answer your question in terms of if it's cheaper to fly by before end of term, definitely cheaper. I actually send the kids, they are old enough to travel on their own, being 14 and 16 almost, a few days back. And yes, it was, let's say, around 1,000 dirhams cheaper for 2 tickets. So it's definitely working, plus you avoid all the craziness in the airport once the school is over.
Thanks, Karina. We are going to be addressing that travel price aspect tomorrow on the show. Message from Vanda asking, really, it's an opportunity to engage our children in different activities. You know, write the thank you letters to the parents and the teachers. Do arts and crafts. Have that social side. And I think that's what I want for my kids right now. They're absolutely exhausted. I'm not worried about the kind of rigor of academics right now. I'm like, just be with your friends. You might, you know, some of them might be leaving forever. You know, teachers have been working incredibly hard as well. So I am fine with it. What about Franny?
So at least for some schools, the end of year reports come out, you know, at the end of the second to last week of school or the beginning of the last week of school, and they already have the attendance for the year calculated. So it doesn't seem like those last few days, which are dominated by parties and performances, are really a major set of educational time. Also, if you're leaving Dubai for the summer, for example, to go to North America, most schools in North America finish either in mid-May or early June. So if you want your children to do summer activities in those areas, you need to be there really by July 1st at the latest, because most of those activities will conclude by the beginning of August. So it's just a timing differential with other countries. And finally, in the UAE, and wisely so, once temperatures top, I think it's 39 degrees, the children aren't allowed to go outside to play for break time. So they end up being cooped up in classrooms, on devices, etc. It doesn't really make sense to keep them there for that.
So interesting, and honestly, so many messages coming in. And I have to say, Georgie, I'm with you saying, I wish we could have a full day on Friday. Not the topic we're talking about today, but I echo your thoughts saying Fridays are so awful on the road and such a stress and a waste of day for everyone. Really, really hot topic, and one we've been loving getting your messages on. As I said, we are going to be addressing cost of travel on the show tomorrow. So if you've got any real life experiences, if you want to crunch some numbers with us, thank you again to Simon Crane, the headmaster of Brighton College. And of course, if you want to send the podcast to your school, it will be available very soon indeed. It's hard to summarize our studio of the day, but I'm going to do my best, and I've got an expert next to me. We are broadcasting live from Cairo. It is here in Zabil, and you will know it. It's already become a really iconic part of the Dubai skyline, but it's what's inside that matters, cliched as it sounds, because this is a property that is unlike any other I have experienced, not just in Dubai, but internationally. We're going to be exploring it now with the hotel manager. Desmond Corley is with us today, seasoned hospitality professional, decades of experience, leadership experience, MBA in hospitality, sport and tourism management, so really at home in a property that really puts health, fitness front and centre. How are you, Desmond?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, happy to speak to you.
It's a rare sit down for you. I always think about the step count of people that work in hospitality, not to mention the hours.
Absolutely, I always get my 10,000 steps a day.
Now, Syro is part of a very prestigious hospitality group, Kirzner Group, but it's the very first Syro in the world. So I feel like we kind of, and I know this is your bread and butter, and I know you've been involved since pre-opening, so, you know, coming up to 2 years now, only opened the property in February. Can you explain a little bit about the property DNA, you know, the brand, the concept?
Absolutely, yeah. It's more than a hotel. It's a groundbreaking concept, a 360-degree approach to fitness and recovery. As you mentioned, we're part of Kirzner International, a legacy-making brand in the luxury five-star hospitality space. And as an innovator, they're now blurring the boundaries of world-class hospitality with our Syro brand, you know, for everyone with an active lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have a particularly active lifestyle, but I've still had a fantastic time since arriving, because it really is 360 from, you know, walking into the lobby where you've got, I mean, obviously some fantastic kind of, you know, shopping and retail opportunities, but, you know, food and a refuel bar, and you've got staff that really live it. And it's, okay, what I'm really trying to say is, where, if you go to, I pack my trainers a lot when I go for a staycation, and they never leave my bag, right, ever. When you come here, you are front and centre with nutrition. The gym is literally here. We've got, as you said, kind of this idea of recovery and labs and technology upstairs. There's members coming in and out. It's such a buzz, and everyone seems to have this kind of shared vision and goal of just wanting to be their best self. This really is unlike anywhere else. So can we start, before we go upstairs and downstairs into the gym, can we start with the rooms? Because people can obviously stay at the property. I'm staying in a room that's called a recovery suite. Now, I've often had to recover for different reasons on a staycation. Tell us a little bit about some of the features that people would find in the rooms here.
Yeah, well, sleep is one of our brand pillars. Very important to get a restorative night's sleep, to be productive, as you can imagine. You know, if you're fatigued, how your performance will be not so good.
Irritable, making bad food choices.
Absolutely.
The list goes on.
Yeah, so there's a lot of thought and functionality that's gone into the rooms. We work with sleep consultants. It's a very zen aesthetic. We have to talk about the thermoregulating mattress. That's the star of the show. We get such good feedback from our guests.
A pillow menu with, I think, about 11 different pillows on it.
Absolutely, yes. And from a nutrition point of view, the in-room refreshment centre is all organic, healthy, so you won't find any fizzy drinks and all this type of thing. We have an in-house nutritionist that's helped to develop our in-room dining menu in the room, so it's all modular, total calorie visibility, your protein, carbs,
all your macros
fats
are there. Yeah. In my room, I was surprised to find behind a door a massage room. Also behind one of the cupboards in that room, yoga mat, you know, resistance straps, and on the TV, classes that you can do. So I did the morning ritual this morning, but, you know, you could do, you know, breath work, you can do low intensity, you can do what you want. And it was an absolute mission to keep my eyes on the television, because the views are unbelievable. You're here in Zabil. So behind us right now, we have got the Dubai Frame. On the other side, which the gym is, you know, front and center, and amazing relaxation rooms upstairs. It is the best view I have ever, ever seen of the Dubai skyline.
Yeah, we're blessed. So, you know, you're either looking, as you say, through the Dubai Frame at Old Dubai, and then the Duality, looking at the more futuristic skyline the other side. Yeah, as you mentioned, within the rooms, a lot of features, the virtual training classes on the screens, the recovery cabinets, so you've got your yoga mats, your meditation cushions, your foam rollers, your diner bands. It's all about being able to do active stretching, so everything is to engender a healthier lifestyle.
Also, air conditioning and, well, ceiling fans. So I know you've got a lot of people that come here who are athletes, who, you know, really are looking at the five pillars we're going to explore in really deep detail. But for people like me, you know, I'm talking on the radio, but it could be someone who's giving a presentation, it could be someone that's jet lagged, creating this optimum environment, it's been so well thought out.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, the fan, for example, a lot of athletes would prefer to have the fan as opposed to the AC, so it doesn't dry the environment, so it's better for their respiratory tract. So again, it goes down to a lot of the thought working with our experts to make sure that we have best in class.
We're going to be continuing this discussion around what's happening in the gyms, in the fitness studios, the master trainers, and a bit of biohacking too. Desmond Corley is with us today. He is the manager at Syro, where we're broadcasting live from Zabil. I do urge you to head over to our Instagram stories. You can get just a small taste of what an incredible place this is. We're also going to be discussing whether you want to stay, because there are some deals happening over the summer, as many properties do for GCC residents, but also this idea around memberships and really being part of an amazing fitness community. In conversation now with Desmond Corley. He is the manager at Syro Wunzabil, where we're broadcasting from this afternoon. Obviously a massive passion for hospitality, but also fitness, and it's, you know, really coming together in this one property, which is a brand new concept for Kersner Group, but I suspect not the last in that name. We touched on one of the five pillars of the brand concept earlier, Desmond, which is sleep, which obviously for a hotel is paramount. But can you unpack the other four for us?
Yep, so the brand is built around five pillars: fitness, recovery, nutrition, sleep and mindfulness, and together they create that integrated wellness solution.
So what does that look like in practice, and can we kind of point to some of the features, some of the areas in the property? And I'm thinking obviously fitness is the obvious one, because we've got some amazing facilities right around us. What's here that's available for hotel guests, but also those who want to become members here as well?
Yeah, so the facilities are available for obviously our hotel guests, and we have a membership as well. It's an expansive facility, so we're talking from level 30, between level 30 and 31 of our hotel. We have 2,000 square meters dedicated to fitness and recovery. The fitness element is built around functional training at our core. We have very dynamic group exercise classes.
I know, I did one at 7 o'clock this morning.
Oh, well done to
That's
you.
That's why I'm grateful to be sitting down for 3 hours this afternoon. I was spinning with Hamza at 7 a.m.
Excellent, yeah. Our cycle studio, with our own signature classes, spin, endurance, climb. We have our experience box with our high intensity interval training. We have our yoga studios, Pilates studios. You know, it's really very expansive, the diversity of facilities and services we have. When we talk about our recovery lab, we have 10 treatment rooms, a lot of modular, holistic treatments, everything from dry needling, cupping, electrical muscle stimulation, eye dome, red light therapy, cryotherapy.
I mean,
Dubai has a lot of excellent products and facilities, but you're crisscrossing town to find them, whereas we have everything under one roof. It's really something unrivaled, very special.
It was interesting in the class this morning, because obviously I had a live instructor, and I know you have master trainers that work with hotel guests and members in the fitness facilities as well, but you've also have some amazing brand ambassadors, you know, the likes of AC Milan, and, you know, putting together some classes for people to do virtually. And then it's just been, as you say, so well thought out from a fitness but also the recovery point of view as well. So fitness, we've talked about one of the pillars as well, nutrition, and we are broadcasting live from your refuel area here. No nasties in the minibar, as we've already established. So people coming in for post-workout smoothies, and, you know, continuing conversations and community as well over food as well.
Yeah, that's a critical part. You know, we want to create that community, have that engagement. We want to create that Syro vibe, if you like. So this is why, you know, on level 30, again, an area where our hotel guests are checking in is also an area where our members would be having, as you say, post or pre-workout protein shakes. It's an area to congregate. We're at this communal table here. We have just adjacent to us our collective, our little amphitheatre, where we do activations, seminars. Again, when we talk about fitness, nutrition, recovery, etc., these can all be topics for seminars, activations, visiting practitioners from an educational point of view.
One thing that really came to mind was this idea of recovery, and that can be from, you know, overcoming illness, jet lag. I know you have a lot of business travelers as well. I've been completely wowed by it. I wanted to ask you about what's next then, because as I said, this is the first Syro globally. Any plans for any others, and how would they differ potentially? Because, you know, we all think about what the needs of different cities.
Absolutely, yeah. So depending on the location, but this Syro will be the accelerator brand for Kersner. Now, as I mentioned, you know, there's a growing global community of like-minded individuals. Mm-hmm. We all have a health and fitness goal. We all want to be the best version of ourselves. So yes, whilst this is the inaugural first Syro here at Syro Wunzabil, the next Syro will be opening next year in Syro Boca Place in Montenegro.
Ooh. Oh, that sounds absolutely divine. So presumably a bit more outdoorsy, out and about.
Yeah, so they're from a beautiful location from a nature point of view, so cycling, sailing, for example.
Oh, fantastic. I had a number of messages asking about membership, so would you mind kind of breaking down some of the kind of, you know, can you come for, you know, could you commit to 3 months or does it have to be a year? And also some of the GCC staycation rates as well. Would you mind ending on some numbers for me, Desmond?
Absolutely. So from a membership perspective, we have two membership categories, silver membership and gold membership. The silver membership is essentially the fitness for the gym, and the gold membership gives you additional access complimentary to the group exercise classes. But obviously associated with Syro One Zabil here, you also get a lot of value-added benefits in terms of things like the valet parking, discounts of room rates, concessions on recovery treatments, etc.
Also, you know, the lounges as well. There was a Zen room where you're discouraged from having your phone, and then there's another one with, you know, Himalayan pink salt and massage chairs overlooking the Burj Khalifa. So, you know, cold plunge, you know, infrared sauna in the women's changing rooms. I mean, I could happily move in. And lastly, on staycations, is there anything happening over the summer? I've seen a lot of GCC deals floating around. Please say you've got one.
Absolutely, yes. I'll urge your listeners to go to our website, syrohotels.com. We have our summer reset package there, including our jet lag recovery program. We also have GCC residents staycation, which enables 20% off our best available rates, 20% discounts off F&B, and as you know from an F&B perspective in the link, it's
unrivaled.
It really is.
It's going to be hosting Michelin next week, and I'm very excited to see it all unfold. Desmond, thank you so much, and thank you for the team. As I said, it's just absolutely incredible experience, whether you are coming, you know, for a treatment or a membership or a staycation. And if you want to send me the word, send me the word health, send me that. I'll be very happy to send you the link. And I've had a couple of messages asking about spelling. It is S-I-R-O, I know, because it's on Desmond's shoes. He's truly living the brand. I don't think it's just me, but I follow an awful lot of animal charities right now, and I feel despair every time I open my phone. So we are talking today about the number of animals in need of homes, of whether that's temporary or full-time, whether it's fostering or a forever friend. And to guide us through this, we've got Mike O'Hara, the man behind Mike's Vet, celebrating a year in business. Dr. Mike, how are you? Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thank you for having me on today.
Absolute pleasure. Is it just me, or do you feel like 2024 summertime is being particularly brutal on our animal community?
It has been. And I think it's just gotten warmer a lot quicker than expected, which is perhaps why the poor little fur babies have been struggling on the streets.
They really have. As I said, every time I open my phone, I feel like it's just, you know, more and more and more. And weird patterns emerging as well. It seems to be a lot of golden retrievers who've been dumped, and, you know, more puppies that are being bred. So it's really... it's been really distressing, really, really distressing. So we're talking about taking some proactivity. And I say this as someone who has got a couple of animals. One was an unwanted pregnancy, and the other one, we were her third home in 6 months. And previous to that, we adopted a senior dog who was 8, and it was the best decision I've ever made in my life. Lucy was just the greatest. So let's talk a little bit about the joy of fostering animals, and I guess the impact that fostering has on animal welfare. From a vet's point of view, what's your take?
No, absolutely. So I think you touched upon a few very valid points there, right? Where when it comes down to fostering an animal or adopting an animal, it's selfish and selfless at the same time, right? Because they do far more for us than we do for them. Yeah, and you know, it's just a simple act of just keeping them in your house, and you know, before you know, they turn into family. That being said, I think a lot of people are worried about, you know, perhaps the cost associated with it, how long they're going to be in the country for. You know, there's so many questions that people have, and a lot of the times I've seen families as well with all the right intentions who go out and adopt an animal or purchase an animal, and they don't think about the long-term cost of keeping that animal first and foremost, and secondly, what happens if they decide to move to another country? You know, and this is where what we try to do is we focus on fostering, or what I like to call temporary adoptions. And what this effectively does is let you see with your family if it's the right fit for you, because having a pet is probably not for everybody. I disagree with that statement myself. I think everyone could use a pet, makes us better people. But for those that it's not for them, at least it gives them a way out rather than, you know, them being put into a corner and then then dumping the animal on the street, which is by far the worst thing that you can do, because once an animal's been domesticated, it's impossible for them to fend for themselves on the street. Cats that have been born and bred.
Not a hope. But the ones that really break my heart are the families that are leaving and are looking for a home for that, you know, their 10-year-old family pet. I'm like, God, this poor animals know nothing but living with you. And I know there are often really difficult, extenuating circumstances. I am aware of that. But these poor little souls. So can we talk about that? So maybe some of the questions you should ask yourself before fostering, before adopting, Dr. Mike, just to make sure that you are going to be finding an animal that could be, you know, finding its forever home. What would you be, you know, asking a family that came to you? And I think many vets would be very happy to ask, you know, answer questions in person as well. What should we be asking ourselves?
Well, first and foremost, is your lifestyle compatible with having a pet? And what I mean by that is do you travel a lot? Do you have someone to take care of the animal when you're not in the country? Other questions would be, if you live in a flat, do you have a balcony? Is the balcony protected? Because, you know, cats specifically can jump from balconies, and we see quite a few accidents that happen. And it's more to do with people just being unaware, because, you know, the common misconception is that cats have great balance and they're not going to jump off a balcony. But other bits of information that I generally ask for is, have they had a pet before? Do they know how much effort it takes, whether it's a cat or a dog or whichever animal it might be? Because there is work that you need to put into that relationship, right, to take care of that animal. And last but not least, what are the long-term plans? You know, are you financially in a position to be able to take care of this animal? Should the animal get sick? Should you need to relocate to another country? Should anything happen? And what I generally recommend is that people keep aside money, just as we do, you know, when we're planning for retirement or we're planning for a relocation or a wedding or whatever it might be. You need to do the same, or for your children, you need to do the same with animals too. If you get them checked up every single year, it's not going to cost you a lot, to be fair, apart from the food that you feed them, which I'll circle back to in a minute. But you need to be diligent with it, just as you would with your children.
Couldn't agree more. And I say this as someone who's currently paying 600 dirhams a month for some heart medication for our 11-year-old spaniel. Dr. Mike is with us today from Mike's Vet. We're talking about fostering and adopting. So if you've got any questions, we're going to be addressing food, what you need to have in your home. I've got a message from Kelly saying, I'm really keen on fostering over the summer, but would need a hard stop in December when my allergic mum visits. Our shelter's really going to take the dog back with the responsibility of finding a home. Tell us about your furry friend. I'd love to hear a waggy dog story. Dr. Mike O'Hara with us today. He is the man behind Mike's Vets and marking a year in business, which is no small feat. And to share his tips and tricks, we're still on the way from a very busy clinic to talk about fostering, or indeed hopefully adopting, some of the many animals in need here in Dubai over the summer. I had a number of questions and messages for you, Dr. Mike. One from Charlene here saying, I've fostered close to 30 dogs now and it's always been a great experience. Whether it's a challenging dog or an easy dog, just knowing I'm part of their adoption journey is an honor. I encourage those who are still unsure of getting a dog or any other pet to give it a go. You won't regret it. Lots of rescue organizations are in need in fosters. I'm very lucky I foster for an organization that's always supporting me throughout the process. I think that raises a really good point in terms of, you're not just, you don't just go along to adoption or foster day and go, oh, you're cute, you're coming home with me today. It, you know, there is obviously processes and support in play, and that ties in with the support of a vet as well, I presume.
Yep, you're spot on. And you know, looking at from the other perspective, right, from a veterinary clinic perspective, there are a lot of vets in the city, and we've been guilty of it at times as well, where we automatically assume that people understand the process. But I find it goes a long way when you walk people through what to expect, you know, signs to look out for, do's and don'ts, you know, simple things like what foods are toxic for dogs, for cats, how do you protect them when they're, you know, in your care, signs of sickness that you should watch out for. You know, we've seen this countless times where, you know, a cat starts to have a high temperature, it's a bit lethargic, and the people who adopted the animal or fostered it for that matter just didn't know better. They just thought the cat was sleeping for extended hours of time. And, you know, in certain cases, you can end up losing the animal. So I think to summarize, a lot of it comes down to education and just, you know, keeping people well informed and also giving people a platform that when they have questions, they could call somebody and ask. And, you know, certain rescue centers here do a great job of that. We do that as a clinic as well, where people will call us and ask us questions pertaining to their animal, and we're more than happy to help them over the phone. But I think it's just keeping this conversation going and not putting people in a corner. I think that's probably the side of it.
Well, that brings me to Kelly's message, saying thanks for this. I'd be very keen on fostering over the summer, but I would need a hard stop in September when my allergic mum visits. Are shelters really going to take a dog back? Would the responsibility of finding a home then fall to me? Talk before about the importance of having a bit of a trial period, whether it is to see if an animal will fit into your lifestyle, your family, any other animals that might be in the home as well, Mike. Have you seen this before where it's been like, yeah, I can help out, you know, I'm here for you for 2 months to take some pressure off the shelter, you know, if they're running out of space, but I would need to give this animal back at this point?
Yeah, I to be fair, I wish more people would do that, because, you know, A, there's clarity in terms of how long you have a foster for the animal. And, you know, we have to respect the fact that someone is offering to help with, you know, whether it's a cat or a dog or any other animal for that matter. So, you know, it's a two-way street. And I love clarity. I love transparency, where if a foster says that they can keep an animal for 6 months, then at least I know I don't have to stress about that animal for 6 months, which is brilliant.
Mm. Message from Marianne saying, oh, Helen, thank you for raising the topic of adoption and fostering. It's so needed. Please mention adopt, never shop, just to reinforce. Thank you. You're welcome, Marianne. Can I just end on that perhaps? Because, you know, I've seen some very cute puppies in pet shops, and the temptation is, oh, you know, if we take this one home, then that's, you know, one animal that's, you know, not in need of a home. And I've seen time and time again so many health issues relating to animals that have been taken away from their mums too early, who haven't had health issues disclosed, haven't been taken care of properly in transit or in the pet shop. Is this something you're still coming up against?
Absolutely. And just to be clear, when it comes down to breeding, breeding in itself is not what I have an issue with, because if you want a specific breed of dog, it's going to have to come from a breeder somewhere down the line, right? But the way it's done is where I have is what I have a problem with, because it should be done ethically. It should be done the right way. The animals should be well taken care of. And again, transparency should be there, where if the family that this puppy or cat came from had medical issues, it should be articulated to the new owner. Because more often than I'd like to see, we see these animals that are bought from a breeder, who probably in certain cases is not even licensed, and the animal has got a plethora of issues. And before you know it, you're raking up vet bills that are 8, 9, 10,000 dirhams just to get this animal healthy. Now, that being said, I would still suggest that you adopt first the animals that are looking for a home in the UAE, which so many kind, generous rescuers have nurtured, and you know they're perfectly healthy. They're some of the nicest animals you'll come across. I'm guilty of this
grateful.
In terms of being on far too many, but yeah, I don't know if you know, Helen, I've got 150 cats at home, by the way.
Sorry, say that again.
I've got 150 cats and 3 dogs at home under my care at the moment.
Oh my God, I'd ask you to name them just for my own amusement, but we would absolutely run out of time. Mike, last question. What do you need at home? And we're not talking about the volume, but if you are looking to, you know, adopt or foster, you know, a stray cat, you know, a dog in need, what are some of the essential bits of kit that you as a vet do recommend?
Oh, brilliant. All right. So first and foremost, if you don't currently have an animal, then it's a lot easier. If you do have an animal, first get the animal you're planning on fostering or adopting vet checked for any contagious diseases, so you don't infect the animals that you have at home. Apart from that, it depends on the animal, really. Cats are fairly easy. You would need a litter box, a couple of toys for them to play with, and food bowls and food. Dogs, pretty much the same sans the litter box, of course. You probably need pee pads, depending on the size of the dog, and you would need to train the dog as well by taking it on walks, so on and so forth. The only thing that I would recommend is for any person considering to get a pet during this time of the year, please do not keep them outdoors, especially during the afternoon. Also, when you take your dogs out for a walk, touch the floor, the tarmac, the interlock, whatever it might be, to make sure that it's not hot. Going to burn your hand, probably going to burn your dog's paws. So just be careful with that, please.
Dr. Mike, thank you so, so much for your level-headed but also caring insights. I really do appreciate it. And as I said earlier, I think so many vets would be really happy to answer people's questions if they were curious and no such thing as a silly question about taking on animals. So with your permission, if people want to send me the word vet, I'd love to send them the website for you guys. I've had a message here from Zora saying, I adopted a few months ago through Kimberly, who works at Mike's Vet, the cutest Scottish foal whose mum was dumped in Deira, and it has completed our family. Dr. Mike, thank you to you and the team. Again, congratulations on this milestone, a year in business, and I'm really grateful we got to catch up today. Thank you so, so much. Wonderful to have you with us. We are marking a day I confess didn't know existed. Women in Engineering Day, and I am curious to hear from our next guest how she thinks the world would be different if there were more female engineers. It is Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, broadcasting with the absolutely amazing Syro. This hotel is absolutely blowing my mind, and talking about tech, it's nailing it. So we are honoured today to have Dr. Rula Sharkey, an MIT-trained associate professor, now at Heriot-Watt University, and her groundbreaking work in engineering has led to the development of Little Guard. It's the world's first smart baby wristband capable of monitoring a child's vital signs and sending alerts to parents, caregivers and emergency services. Dr. Rula, so lovely to have you with us. Is it weird to say Happy Women in Engineering Day? Are there cards for it?
Hello, hi. Thank you for having me. And actually, yeah, Happy Women in Engineering Day for all women in engineering or any other young girls who's planning to enroll in engineering.
Well, I'm going to get your take on that later in the show, actually. Any advice for any young girls listening today who want to get more involved in STEM and engineering? Now, this year's theme is Enhanced by Engineering, and it highlights, obviously, the remarkable contributions of female engineers around the world who are making massive impact on our lives and our future. Can we start with you, Doctor? Would you mind sharing your journey into this field and what inspired you to pursue a career in, let's be honest, a traditionally male-dominated industry?
Yes, indeed. Well, actually, I was inspired by my parents, both of my parents engineers, and definitely I got more inspiration from my mother. My mother, she was one of the pioneer graduated in engineering in the Arab world. She graduated in the early 1970s, her passionate for engineering inspired me, and I pursue a career in engineering field, which is something I really proud of, and I hope one day I'm gonna inspire young girls.
You already are. I wanted to ask you that. How do you think the world would be different if there were more female engineers? What would you imagine we might see more of, less of?
Engineering, it's about solving problems, design and solving problem that we are facing in our daily life. I believe with more female in engineering, different perspectives and different problems will be solved, similar to what we're going to talk about today, Little Guard.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this because I love to my mind, the best businesses, the best inventions are there to solve a problem. So tell us a little bit about this project. And what inspired you to develop a truly innovative smart baby wristband?
Well, the idea is it came from a personal experience, unpleasant actually, personal experience. I was caring of my son, Joseph. He was 2 years old. He suffered from seasonal flu, and the body temperature increased at night, which is very common among children. And I'm sure every single mother can understand how the kids are suffering from seasonal flu, the fevers, and how fevers spike at night. So it's nothing special, but caring about him, checking his body temperature through the night many times. I have work next day. I wake up exhausted, lots of anxiety. And then the idea came to me, which is the smart wristband.
We're going to talk about exactly what that smart wristband covers. As I said earlier, you know, game-changing, life-changing, potentially. So do stay with us, joining us live on the line as we mark International Women in Engineering Day. Dr. Rula Sharkey, Associate Professor. She is MIT-trained and is now at Heriot-Watt University here in the UAE. We're also going to talk a little bit about her ideas and encouragement for getting more young women. And her groundbreaking work has led to the development of Little Guard. It's the world's first smart baby wristband that is capable of monitoring a child's vital signs and then sending alerts to parents and to emergency services as well. Dr. Rula, they're just talking about how it was born out of many a sleepless night monitoring her young son's temperature. So it's one thing to go, oh gosh, you know, I wish there was a gadget to do it. It's another thing to think, I'm going to create it. Where did you start in terms of the engineering design process? Would you mind telling us a little bit about behind the scenes?
Yes, of course. So I got the idea middle of the night, and then next day in the morning, I start research about it. What is the similar project available in the market? And I find out the nanotechnology. You know, in the field of electronics, everything is getting smaller and smarter very quickly. So these nano sensors can be embedded in the fabric itself. So the wristband, it won't be like an Apple Watch or something. It will be very comfortable piece of fabric, could be cotton, nice and comfy for infant. And the idea at the beginning was a smart blanket. But again, from my experience as a mother, kids will never keep the blanket on all the night.
So true.
So I convert it to be a wristband. At least I can make sure it's touching the skin on the correct spot, so it can give me a correct measurement. And the idea can be modified as well. We can modify it to a smart blanket, and the blanket can be converted to be cold, so it will cool down the baby body temperature while getting the help. Usually, amazing. When we give a painkiller or any kind of medication to the kids, it needs some time to start kicking, but nothing better than a cold piece of fabric will help the infant body temperature to decrease as soon as possible.
So now we're looking at a working prototype, and you know, maybe looking to partner with some industry leaders as well. I wanted to ask you just one thing that came to mind when it was talking about alerting, you know, emergency services. What happens if there's, you know, Wi-Fi disruptions? How does it work in terms of that communication piece?
The device is supposed to send an alarm to the parents when the body temperature increased beyond the safe level. And in case the parents did not react or the body temperature keep increasing, it can send alarm to emergency help as well directly. I was lucky that I work on this project with my student. One of my students, his name is Nahul. He's a fourth year robotics engineering, and this was his graduation project, fourth year graduation project. And
he
got an amazing result. We got a very nice, promising result, and we are so happy with the result.
Can I ask you then, lastly, on International Women in Engineering Week, it was just a couple of days ago, and what advice would you give to any young women about the rewards of working in this industry and perhaps overcoming, as we said, you know, traditionally male-dominated space and often some, you know, cultural reservations as well? Who do you think a career in this field would really, really suit, and what will they get from that, Dr. Brula?
Well, I might disagree with the says that it's a male-dominated field. Unfortunately, it is, but I can inspire young ladies. If she have a passion about math and physics, definitely engineering is the right place to start. It's a very, it's an amazing field that she can really leave an impact on society working on real problems. And I hope that I will be an inspiration for young girls to join engineering.
Absolutely.
Such a lovely field.
Dr. Brula, thank you so much for your time and your efforts. I can't wait to see Little Guard in the marketplace. I think that peace of mind is just incredible for new parents, and what a backstory in terms of that inspiration. Dr. Brula Sharkey speaking to us from Heriot Watt University, and female engineer, long may this continue, and we'd love to hear from your little engineers as well. It is incredibly hard to keep up with the ever-changing world of social media, from new platforms to new guidelines, which is why we have brought in Alex from House of Social. She is a business and social media creative strategist, the founder of her own company after decades in agency life. She works with small companies, she consults into bigger companies, helping them to figure out the best way to leverage social media. So, client base here in the UAE, but also beyond into Europe and the US now. So we're going to talk in a little bit later about how small businesses can use social media into the summer to, you know, keep making that money, and also looking behind the headlines too. Alex, how are you?
I'm good. Can I just say, that was like an amazing intro. Thank you so much. I'm humbled.
You're so welcome. You're so worth it. But I do turn to you a lot because I feel like it's really hard to keep up, you know, with you know, algorithm changing, new platforms being launched. Yeah. And, you know, this is very much your bread and butter. It's helping people understand what is worth their hard-earned times and their dirhams when it comes to ad spend. So before we talk new platforms, let's talk about news, because from July, so just a few weeks, unlicensed influencers in Abu Dhabi could be facing fines of 10,000 dirhams. So I wanted to ask you, what counts as an influencer?
I love this question, and I'm loving that we're talking about this topic, and hopefully we can clarify some things. So with this permit, and let's just start already by clarifying that this is a permit, this is not a license, so this doesn't void influencers or content creators in Abu Dhabi having to not have a license. So you need to have your license in Abu Dhabi and also in UAE if you are a content creator influencer, and now you will need to have this permit from July 1st. Now, as of now, the permit does not come with any criteria, at least as of now. So at this point in time, to answer your question, anyone can be an influencer or a content creator. You have social media presence. Maybe you have 10 followers. Maybe you have 500 or 10,000 or 100,000. At this point, because this permit is not coming with any criteria attached to it, the simple answer is anybody can go and apply and buy the permit. Individual cost is $1,250. And if you are a group of influencers, it's 5,000. So if you are a company or a group, I believe it's 5K, or I'm looking here at my notes. So there is not a criteria. There's no criteria attached to this permit, at least as of now.
Interesting.
So to simplify the answer, could be anyone.
Yeah. It could be annual, but I think it's a really good point to clarify that this isn't a business license. It's not if you're monetizing your social media. If you get this permit, then you don't need to, you know, to have that business license, that trade license in place, which so many companies and agencies ask for and should ask for in order to collaborate with you. Interesting. Okay, what about in Dubai? Do we know what the situation is here?
We don't know yet. It will probably trickle down to Dubai. But I also just want to remind again everyone that in the UAE, Abu Dhabi, or Dubai, if you are making money from the content you are putting on social media, regardless of the amount of your following, again, you could be having like 100 followers, but you are making money from your social media content, either in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, you need to have that license from the National Media Council that I believe costs 15K, but you also then need to have your freelance license. So if we are starting to tally up costs, you could be looking at 30K. Ouch.
But isn't it interesting when we think about people going into social media in order to monetize from the beginning? Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work out that way. You know, if you go in with the strategy of going, I'm going to quit my job, I'm going to be an influencer. You know, the time it takes to build your audience, to build engagement, to find it can take a really long time before you're making any money at all.
Yeah.
Alex from House of Social is with us today. I reached out to you yesterday because I got an email saying there's a new platform called Telefans. I'm not going to be mean about the name, but I could. And it's claiming to be the rival for TikTok. And I was like, oh, I wonder if Alex knows about this. So I'm curious to get your hot take on this. Is it worth a look? Yeah. What do we know about it?
Yeah. Could I just say one more point on the previous topic? Because I think it will be super helpful.
Oh, sure,
is that
of course.
Okay? I just really wanted to say something for anyone out there who is a content creator or an influencer, that this permit is not what's going to protect you. I just want to remind anyone out there from an influencer or a content creator, what will always protect you is the contract and the scope and the payment terms. That is what will always protect everyone in this business. And this permit doesn't come with any criteria around that. So I just want to make sure to remember to remind everybody that put those contracts in places, write down the scope, you know, get paid up front, even if it's just that 50%. That is what is going to really make this whole influencer content creator landscape more with better, higher standards. I just wanted to say this piece out there because I think that's the most important thing.
I think that's really, really good advice because, as you said, if you're running it as a business, you need to treat it like a business. Mm-hmm. So Telefans, which sounds like a platform for something else. what do we know about it, Alex?
Thank you for telling me about it. Look, for... Okay.
Oh, you didn't even know about it. God, it's clearly not rivaling TikTok then.
Listen, for the regular folk, meaning people that don't do my job, you regular people, you know, that are not social media living and breathing like me, you guys will always know when something is really, really, really hot because you are going to see it absolutely everywhere. You're going to hear social media experts talking about it. You know, you are even going to see some media known influencers talking about it. There will be those people on it, you know, big influencers from around the world that will be on it. So one of the first things that I can say to people is, like, for regular folk that don't do this for a living, you will start to know because it literally is going to be in your face everywhere. Just like how TikTok started getting into everyone's faces and you couldn't get away from TikTok. For people that do this for a living, like me, we are looking at things, for example, that I told you last night, which is like, well, I just looked at the top 50 ranking apps in the Apple Store, and I don't see this app there. So that's already a giveaway that these are the early, early stages. I didn't see any big articles being written about it in all of the social media digital platforms where we receive all of the biggest news. And so these are some of the things that we, people like me, are looking at to start to assess where is this new platform sitting. So, you know, my quick conclusion is this is very early. They are doing PR. They are reaching out to actually get this, which is like what we're doing right now. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so having done a quick homework, this is an early stage app. And with apps, there's always so many new things coming up. It's always about the longevity. Are they still going to be around in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? Can they pick up traction? It's so hard to pick up an initial traction when a new app launches to the market. So if
and then keep it going, because I want to ask you about another one, which is, you know, Threads, which I felt like a lot of us were not bullied into, but it was, you know, it was much hyped. Let me see if I've even got that app. Isn't this terrible? Okay, last time I posted a thread, Let's is going to be good value. That was August last year.
Oh, wow.
Is anyone using it?
Yeah, with Threads is a whole different story. First of all, because Threads is backed up by Instagram, it's made by Instagram, and they are pushing Threads like crazy. Actually, I get an average of like 15 to 10 new followers without even posting on Threads, just to give you an idea. I could go a week without posting on Threads, and I keep getting like new followers. So Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, is really, really pushing for Threads. They are really wanting to compete with X, the X Twitter, to become a healthier version of Twitter. And a lot of people definitely are on Threads, a lot of big influencers, celebrities. And Threads should definitely be a platform that you should consider to gain a new followership. They've just launched a new setting that what you post on Instagram can go into your Threads directly. So that can just be now a very easy win to get started. So for anybody listening, or maybe even you, Helen, you could just activate that setting and then you might start picking up a whole new following. And it will be an international following because it still has a bigger presence in Europe and the US. So for anyone wanting to branch out of the Middle East and gain more, I love that. I love to branch out and build my audience beyond here. This can be a great tactic. And I've certainly been having lots of new people following me. And then remember, with any new platform, actually, this is a very good point. With any new good platform that's taking off, but the platform needs to be taking off like Threads, when you get in early, that is the best time. Because when you get in early, that's when you have all the benefits, right? So you get more exposure, they push you more, people see more of your content. So it can be a great way for people to maybe see your podcast or download your premium or even book your services. So definitely put Threads on your top five. Maybe it's the summer to do.
Maybe. Alex, we've run out of time. I wanted to ask you about your social media for small business over the summer. So would you come back in a few weeks so we can address this? Would that be okay?
Of course.
You are a star. Yeah. In the meantime, though, give Alex from House of Social a follow on Threads, on Instagram, on TikTok. She is an absolute ray of sunshine as a follow, but also as an expert. So loads of free classes and courses on there if you are looking to up your social media game over the summer. Or if you are a business and you need some consultancy, really, really fantastic results with Alex from House of Social. If you want her details, just send me the word social. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.